This is WWGH 107.1 FM Radio, and I would like to welcome you to A Voice of a People, live with Linda Sims here on this station. We also stream live on the web, WWGH1071.com. You have the opportunity to download free app called TuneIn on any electronic device, and then search WWGH. If you are interested in calling in and connecting with my guest or myself, please consider calling 740-383-9944. Let me share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People, starting with Victory and Truth Ministries, Bishop J.C. Church, 485 State Route 4 South, Bucyrus, Ohio. Telephone number there is 419-563-9565. Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC. 309 Suite A, North Main Street here in Marion, Ohio. Telephone number there is 740-382-8552. Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson. Address 582 Lee Street. Telephone number there, 740-223-1515, and that is also located in Marion, Ohio. They have an ongoing announcement. Free produce market every second Saturday of every month. So mark your calendars. That would be this Saturday this week from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Logos Christian Ministries, again, 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. No appointment or pre-registration required. All that is required of you is your name and number in your household. Excuse me. Also, Logos Christian Ministries is www.logoschristianministries.com. Inspect Ohio, LLC, your one-call inspection company. Home inspection company with 25 years of experience working for you. That is in LaRue, Ohio. Telephone number there is 740-262-0939. And thank you once again for tuning in. And if this is your first time, hopefully you will tune in again. I have a thought for you today. There are over 7 billion people on Earth. And you're going to let one person ruin your day? Don't. Don't give anyone that much power over you. Okay? All right. Keep that in mind. Now I would like to introduce to you my guest today, Tim Combs. How are you, Tim?
Fine. Fine. Good. Nice day today.
It is beautiful out, isn't it? Sunshiny.
Yes.
Now when you get up, the sun meets you right in the morning.
That's true.
Right?
That is true.
Now, Tim is a political historian. That's a title I haven't given him because he's really up on politics. And not only that, he's a former history teacher years ago in Marion City Schools. And he was a former candidate himself. So he knows a lot about politics,
yes.
Don't you?
It's in my DNA, I guess you would say, for all these years. Yeah.
Oh, it is. I always get, you know, people say, well, Tim is pretty good with what he does and what he has to offer our listeners. So listen up. And we do want to say, go vote. Get out to vote. Maybe you can help someone else get there, but go out to vote. It's just too late to register, isn't it?
Well, yeah, registration closed back in early April, and then actually earlier a couple hours ago at 2 o'clock, was the time passed for early voting. So the polls open at 6:30 a.m. tomorrow.
Right.
And will be open until 7:30 p.m. tomorrow night. Okay. And hopefully everybody knows where their location is to vote. There are 7 locations with a total of 65 precincts. And I know I'm going to be up at the working at the Coliseum. And we're what we call our information desk. And as people come in, we just tell them, have their ID ready, mostly driver's license. But they could have their senior identification card.
Okay.
And this could do any of the check-in spots there and show that. And they will verify that they're registered, and they will give them their voter identification card to to put in the machine, and they can then go ahead and vote. Or they can use a, they wish to use a paper ballot, they can do that too. They have that option if they want to exercise that option. Most people, I'd say 98-99% use the touchscreen devices, which we've now been using those as of this November, 13 years. And no, statewide, a lot of these devices were put together back in the mid 05, 06 period. And they've gotten a lot of use, and so now they're going to have to be start being replaced because they're beginning to have some being worn out and use and that sort of thing. So I believe the state has just passed, I believe this is the case, just passed a multi-million dollar program to be able to counties, because frankly the counties can't afford it, it's on their own, so they need assistance from the state. I'm not sure what the federal, initially it was federal assistance. I'm not sure where that stands, if there's any more federal assistance, but the states are happy to step in and give this, their local communities that help. So,
okay. How did you get interested in the politics?
This is, I tell the story to my family gets tired of hearing this. Actually, I have got politically the bug bit when I was 9 years old, if you believe
really,
that.
That old?
I was...
young.
Well, my grandfather, I'm originally from the Canton area. My grandfather had served on the Canton City Council back in the 30s. And actually what happened was, this is summer of 1956. That was good old black and white television days. And in that time, the conventions were on day, you know, gavel to gavel coverage. And that was the way it was in those at that time. And as happened, the 56th Democratic Convention happened to be on as I was in July. It was about to spend July. And the gentleman who was nominated for president was Adlai Stevenson. And he was the second, this would be the second Eisenhower-Stevenson election.
Okay.
Normally what's happening, what would happen is the candidates for president would designate their person for vice president. Well, this was his second run for it. He had run in 52. He decided to throw the contest open to the convention, let the convention decide.
Okay.
And there were two members of the United States Senate running for the nomination. One name probably familiar to a lot of people. The other name maybe not as familiar. One was Senator Estes Kefauver of Tennessee.
Okay.
His major challenge came from Senator John F. Kennedy of Massachusetts.
All right.
And it actually went to two ballots. This is the last time we, one of our national conventions, major parties, went beyond one ballot. And Senator Kefauver ended up getting the nomination.
Okay.
And that fall, of course, Stevenson would lose to Eisenhower. And John F. Kennedy would then begin planning his run for president 4 years later.
Okay.
Some say how history changed, how history, you know, the matter of history. If some historians believe that if Kennedy, let's say, had won that nomination for vice president and Stevenson gone down to defeat, there might have been those who would have blamed Kennedy's Roman Catholic faith for the defeat.
Okay.
And of course, that would be somewhat of an issue in 1960.
Yeah.
But it still, he was able to be elected. And so, you know, it's, as I say, those are the quirks of history at times and how they, anyhow, I happened to be watching that thing, that roll call, and I just,
sparks,
you know, I just
went,
got clicked and they're on, you know, whatever. So.
Wow, that's neat. Yeah. That's really neat. A challenge for
yeah,
me.
Yes.
Yeah. So. See what I can do about it. How can I get involved? And we're hoping that, you know, you can spark something. And someone else that's listening to the program, that maybe they can be sparked also to be a part of the system, you know, part of our democratic process. And not only that, it's our liberty to vote.
And with that, I'd like to go ahead and talk about where we're at today here on the eve of this,
this
2018
locally,
primary
right?
election.
All right.
Let me just say... that I think it would be an understatement to say that the Republican gubernatorial primary has been rather nasty.
What happened?
The ads that have been shown.
Yeah.
I think I read an article here a few days ago that both Mr. DeWine and Ms. Taylor have each spent something like over $5 million each on their TV advertising.
Okay.
Those, of course, are the two candidates for the Republican nomination for governor, Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor, State Attorney General Mike DeWine.
Okay.
Governor Kasich cannot run again because of the two-term limit.
Right.
So they are battling out for the Republican nomination. The Democratic nomination, there are four major candidates. Technically, there are actually are six candidates on the ballot for the Democratic nomination. Two of them are what you would call basically token candidates. But there are four major candidates. Richard Cordray, former Attorney General, former State Treasurer, head of the Consumer Finance Bureau under President Obama. Mm-hmm. And he did have that position under President Trump and then resigned to come home and run for governor. He is one of the candidates. Another candidate is the former mayor, former congressman from Cleveland, Dennis Kucinich.
Okay.
State Senator Joseph Schiavone from the Youngstown area is a candidate. And then former State Supreme Court Justice Bill O'Neill. Those are the four major candidates for the Democratic nomination.
Okay.
And then, as I say, there's a couple other minor candidates that are on the Democratic ballot also. And again, in Ohio, for the last 40 years, the candidates for governor and lieutenant governor run as a joint ticket. Mm-hmm. They run as a team. And different states do this differently. In Ohio, when a candidate for governor wants to go ahead and before they actually circulate their petitions, they have to get a running mate for lieutenant governor. Okay. Then they circulate a joint petition, and then once they're certified, then they can run. That filing deadline was way back in February for major party candidates. And we actually have three parties that are recognized this year. Actually, voters, when they go to the polls tomorrow, will have four options. They can take a Democratic ballot, they can take a Republican ballot, the Green Party, which is a third party, they can take that ballot. Mm-hmm. Or they do have a fourth option, and this is what I would call for the people who I would call the true independent voters. They can vote issues only.
In
Marion County, there's only one issue. That is the proposed state constitutional amendment dealing with congressional redistricting to change that process. And that's it. Now, in other counties, there may be school issues, other variety of issues, but in Marion County, there's only one issue.
And what's the benefit of that issue?
Okay, way it is done right now is the General Assembly passes a congressional redistricting bill, the governor has signed it. Frankly, it is, many people feel it brings about gerrymandering, which is the drawing of districts in such a way as to benefit one political party. Right now, we have 16 congressional districts. There are, 12 Republicans and 4 Democrats were currently. But the districts were so gerrymandered that those elections were almost preordained. Mm-hmm. The hope is that with this new system, if it's adopted, will allow for a little bit more balance and maybe make things a little more competitive between the parties. And so that's what both political parties have actually endorsed this issue. I'm going to guess that it will pass probably rather easily. A few years ago, we actually passed a constitutional amendment dealing with the drawing the lines for the General Assembly, the State Senate and State House of Representatives. This one for tomorrow deals with the U.S. congressional districts.
Right.
And they'll be redrawn after the 2020 federal census. So.
Okay.
Yes, like as I say, the Democratic primary for governor has been relatively low-key. Mr. Cordray has probably the greater amount of money. He's had TV ads on. I've heard a couple of radio ads from Mr. Kucinich. Mm-hmm. But it has been a very nasty Republican battle between Ms. Taylor and Mr. DeWine on the Republican side. They've hitting each other, a lot of negative advertising. Mm. And and then, as I say, there will be also a Green Party candidate on the ballot. As I said, today was a deadline statewide for independent candidates to file. I don't know whether anybody on the statewide level filed as an independent candidate for any office, but they would have had to file by 4:00 today.
Okay.
The same with the local offices or district offices. I would assume if anybody did file statewide, we will at least get a news report here next day or two about that.
Okay.
If they did file, then their petitions have to be checked for a signature, to make sure they have enough valid signatures before the Secretary of State could certify them. And then the Secretary of State would then notify all 88 boards of election who have been, if there were indeed any. I don't know there were any at all.
Right.
But that goes for the local candidates. Now, there was one local candidate who did file as an independent candidate, Warren Tom Edwards, I believe his name is, filed against Judge Jim Slagle for that one judgeship. and he was as apparently the only independent candidate locally to file as a candidate. Now, of course, judicial candidates in November do not have a party label. Judicial candidates in the May primary, if they're running as a Democrat or Republican, will be on the ballot tomorrow for nomination. But in the general election, then there is no party label on the general election ballot. So, so you have that contest for governor. There's also a Republican contest for state treasurer. A Robert Sprague and a Sandra O'Brien are once again running for that nomination. The rest of the Democratic and Republican candidates are uncontested, and they will, you know, they will get what's called a complimentary vote tomorrow, and then they will move on to the general election. And I believe the Green Party did not file anybody other than just the one candidate for governor. I'm really kind of surprised Libertarian Party, which is probably the biggest of the third parties, did not file anybody. Now, I'm not sure about some local areas, but I know statewide or in this area, there are none of those people running. Also tomorrow, people will have those who voted in either one of the party primaries or any of the party primaries will be able to vote also for members of their state central and county central committees. And that actually is an election because the central committees, which are the governing committee for the county parties, will be elected. And then the state central committees also are elected for the state parties, their governing party. And they actually are elected tomorrow at the primary, at the party primary. Now, if you're voting on issues only, that's all you vote on is just issues. You don't vote in the party primary.
And that's the independent ticket, right?
Well, it's not an independent ticket. It's just independent voters.
Independent voters.
Because issues only voters,
So they don't have a ticket.
No. That's
issues.
And somebody who files as an independent is actually not running on a ticket. They're running their independent status in the general election then. So,
But they still vote for whether the candidate is Republican or Democrat, right?
Well, the voters would not. If you vote on issues only, that's all the thing you vote on is issues. Now, in the general election, you can vote for everything. One little quirk about primaries in Ohio, if you're a 17-year-old, but your 18th birthday falls this year, as it happens, on before the 6th of November, you can vote in the in tomorrow's primary for candidates. Now, you cannot vote on issues because because that issue is actually being decided tomorrow, nor can you vote for members of your central committee because that's actual election. But in other words, for other nominations, you can vote for that. Then, you know, and then of course, when you, by the time you get the November election, you'll be 18, then you'll have full voting rights then at that point. So, as I said, there's been there's been some interesting ads on TV in the last couple of weeks or several months. Actually, I think I've heard more negative comments about some of the ads than I've heard a lot of times in the past. There's also a very heated contest in the Republican primary for the 12th congressional district. This is a district actually includes a couple townships in southeast Marion County. This is the district that Pat Tiberi once represented. He resigned and took a job as, I believe, the executive director of the Ohio Business Roundtable. So he's left Congress. So it has to be it's going to be an interesting thing for those people. There's actually two primaries tomorrow. There is one set of one primary for the unexpired position because there will be a special election in August for that, for the remaining 4 months of Mr. Tiberi's term. And then there's a separate thing for the full term, which starts in January for that seat. I'm guessing, well, let me put it this way. Theoretically, four different people could be nominated. You could have a Republican-Democrat nominated for the short-term seat in August and a different Republican-Democrat nominated for the full term in November. I'm going to guess what's going to happen is the person who gets the nomination for the short term will also get the nomination for the long term, for the regular term in November. That's my expectation, but will happen on both sides. There are, I believe it's 10 Republicans seeking the nomination for the Republican nomination and 7 Democrats seeking the nomination. And again, there will be a Green Party candidate on the August, and I believe also on the November ballot also.
What's the Green Party, though? What does that mean?
The Green Party, they're basically environmental party, environmentalists.
Oh, okay.
Actually, they're almost an international group, particularly in Europe, particularly in Germany. The Greens are a major political organization.
Okay.
This country, they're out there, but there may be a few Green Party office holders in some local offices, probably out in some of the Western states, but that's about the extent of it. But they do run candidates. They run a candidate for president usually every 4 years, and they get maybe 500,000 votes nationwide or something like that, and so forth. But anyhow, what will happen is then in August there will be a special election for this unexpired term of Mr. Dewberry. This race is going to get national attention. Already it's getting national attention. And because of the fact that back in March, the Democrats picked up a seat in Pennsylvania that had previously been a Republican seat,
right,
a seat that Mr. Trump had carried by, it was 27 points.
Mm-hmm.
He only carried this 12th seat by 11 points. And because of what has been considered the Democratic enthusiasm, Democrats feel very good they could very possibly flip that seat in the August special election. Again, a heated contest there. You have names that have been out there. State Senator Troy Balderson from Newark, Township Trustee from Delaware County, Melanie Lenahan, who is backed by Jim Jordan, his group out of Washington. State Senator Kevin Bacon from the Columbus area. Carol Bryan, who is the Delaware County Prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the Democratic side, you haven't seen really commercials, at least I haven't seen any TV commercials, but there's been a lot of grassroots and whatever. Franklin County is actually the county where all these candidates had to file their petitions. That's the biggest number of people in that district are in some of the Franklin County suburbs. The Franklin County Recorder, Daniel Connor, who has the endorsement of the Franklin County Democratic Party, is thought to be the leading contender for that seat. The next is former Franklin County Sheriff Zach Scott.
Mm-hmm.
There is a John Russell, a farmer from, I believe he's from Licking County, as a candidate. And then there's a Jackie Patton, who is a nurse and educator, I believe, from the Columbus area, is the fourth major Democrat. Then there are a few other ones running. So both parties will have nominees or have contests for their nomination.
Okay.
Now, where most people in Marion County will not be voting in that race because we're not in the 12th district. We're in the 4th district. And there are primaries in the 4th district, but you haven't heard a lot about them. One of them involves, obviously, Mr. Jordan is running for renomination. And then on the Democratic side, there are several candidates. Likely the leader is Janet Garrett from up in Lorain County.
Oh, okay.
This 4th district is a rather large district. It goes from south was up to, and actually candidates in the 4th district have to file their paperwork in at the Lorain County Board of Elections because it's the most populous part of the district in the 4th. Countywide, the big race here locally, probably countywide, has been the race for the Republican nomination for prosecuting attorney between Prosecutor Ray Grogan and his challenger, Jennifer Kroski. They'll be the Republican nominee. Waiting for them in the general election is Democrat Jeff Ratliff, local attorney, who is the Democratic candidate.
Right.
County Auditor Joanne Cassotis, particularly with today's filing deadline, is uncontested for re-election
to
another term as
his
auditor.
Mm-hmm.
County Commissioner, you have incumbent Republican Commissioner Ken Stuyvesant being opposed by a retired teacher, former educator Tara Dyer, the Democratic candidate in that race.
She was uncontested. What happened?
Well, she's uncontested in the primary.
Okay,
in the general election, she'll face
Mr. Stuyvesant. She'll face him then.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, state representative, we have the current representative, Dorothy Palanda, is term limited.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two Republican candidates, a Tracy Richardson and a Matthew Salmon, I believe it is, are running for the Republican nomination. And the Democratic candidate is Glenn Goble. He's uncontested on the Democratic side.
Okay.
And by the way, the prosecutor's election is for the unexpired two-year term. That election would not be up this year, but because of the death of Brett Yeager back in October, the Republican Party had named someone to that position, Mr. Grogan received the Republican Party appointment for that. So now he has to run for the unexpired two-year term at this point. So, and I believe, well, like I say, there are some contests for some precinct committee races. I think for even for a couple of the Republican state senate committee races, there are some contests there. So, but let me just make a general comment here. There is, you know, a lot of these guys run in with terms of Mr. Trump and so forth. And certainly Mr. Trump is an interesting individual. his approval rating has stayed in about a range of about 38 to 42%, around 40%. And that number hasn't really varied in the last year. And it's gone up a little bit, moved down a little bit. Certainly all the various controversies, the investigation by Robert Mueller and his team, whether it be Russia, whether other things, these Stormy Daniels process, all of that. And the other thing is, and generally the it looks as if Democrats are probably going to have a pretty good year because of the intensity of the opposition to him and what he's trying to push. So that's where we're at, and where we as we go forward to the November 6th, which is the day of the general election.
So you're saying it looks good for the Democratic Party?
It looks, generally, I think the general expectation is that the House of Representatives likely is going to, U.S. House, is going to flip over to Democratic control, maybe even the Senate. Now, we have a Senate contest here in Ohio. Senator Sherrod Brown is running for re-election to his third term. He has no opposition in the primary. There are two major Republicans running, Congressman Jim Renacci from the Northeast Ohio and Michael Gibbons from the Cleveland area, a businessman. And they're running for the Republican nomination. I think there's a couple other candidates in that race, but they're the two major competitors there.
Okay, now Sherrod Brown, does his position run 4 years or two?
Six-year term. That's a six-year
term.
United States senators are 6 year term.
All
House members are two, and the senators are 6 year term.
Because I knew he was there when Barack Obama was President.
Obama was there. Well, he was first elected 12 years ago. Actually, he ousted Mike DeWine in the 2006 Senate election in that Democratic year. And then he got reelected in 2012, and Barack Obama was reelected to a second term as president. He got reelected over Josh Mandel, the current state treasurer. Mr. Mandel was going to run for the Senate seat. Then apparently his wife has some health issues, so he pulled out earlier this year from the Senate race. He's going to complete his term as state treasurer and then apparently go back to private life, I'm assuming.
And DeWine, it was my understanding that they wanted someone else on the Republican ticket other than DeWine.
Well, Mr. DeWine has been around for a time. He's been around. He was years ago, he was the Greene County prosecuting attorney. Then he got elected to Congress in the early 80s. He was there for a number of years. Then he got elected. He was a lieutenant governor under George Voinovich. Then he got elected to the United States Senate, defeated for election in the Senate. 8 years ago, he came out and ran for Attorney General against Richard Cordray, who was then the state AG. And it was a very Republican year at that time in 2010. And DeWine, that's probably the only reason DeWine beat Cordray. It was by 1%. It was a very tight election. Very close. And then Mr. Cordray got appointed by President Obama to head up the Consumer Finance Bureau, and that's what he did for these last few years. And so then he resigned last fall and came home to run for governor. And I suspect will be the Democratic nominee for governor. His running mate is former Congresswoman Betty Sutton from the Akron area. Mr. DeWine's running mate is actually the current Secretary of State, John Husted, who is going to run for governor. They made a kind of a deal, and Mr. Husted is Mr. DeWine's running mate for lieutenant governor. So. And Ms. Taylor's running mate is a gentleman, John. Boy, it starts with the letter E. He's, I think, a businessman from someplace in Ohio.
Pardon? Is it Ely? It seemed like I saw.
It's E something, EU, whatever. It's a kind of an unusual name. And anyway, he's the her running mate for lieutenant governor. Frankly, I've never even seen the man. I would not. I wouldn't recognize him if he walked in here right now. She, and the irony is, of course, she's been John Case's lieutenant governor the last 8 years, but you wouldn't know it from her ads. I mean, she's Mr. Kasich is almost at this point a man without a party. Hmm. He said here over this past weekend on one of the Sunday network shows that he didn't leave the Republican Party. The Republican Party left him.
Oh, really?
And so he's, and then goes, there are those who say he is flirting with running for president in 2020, whether he's going to challenge Trump for the Republican nomination, whether he's going to run as an independent.
Right.
You know, all I can say is stay tuned on that one because it's, we just don't know.
A lot of people don't think that President Trump will be around for
well, again, we'll see. All, as I say, we'll
don't know.
It has been it has been challenging to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's interesting. I'm about ready to read an article in the. A magazine called The Economist, which is a British publication about what's become of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And I haven't read the article yet, but I'm guessing from the title, it's probably not, they've got some real concerns.
And what happened to Paul Ryan? Why did he step
in? Well, I think Mr. Ryan sees the coming wave and he doesn't want to be, I mean, he's currently the speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans would lose the majority. Then he would likely become minority leader, and he doesn't want to stick around. He's been in Congress now for, I think, about 20 years or so and decided to go back to Wisconsin. And, of course, they always say about they want to be with their families, so, which may well be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think he sees the hiding right on the wall. That's why you've had a number of Republican members of Congress
decide not to retire
or whatever, and just not run for re-election.
Mm.
They say what they call the blue wave developing. You see this throughout the country in especially special elections, state legislative elections, special congressional elections, even where Republicans have may have retained their seats, the margins have been much closer. And these are in Republican districts.
Right.
So if they're in Republican districts and they're just barely winning, what's going to happen in districts that are not as Republican? There's like 23 congressional districts where there are Republican congressmen, but Hillary Clinton carried the district in the presidential election 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are many of them are probably not going to make it for re-election in a Democratic. Because what's happened is particularly suburban women and in the suburbs. Those are the ones that have just, they're the ones that elected this Connor Lamb in Pennsylvania.
Right.
Basically this Doug Jones, when he won the Senate race in Alabama in December, mm-hmm. it was in suburbs around Montgomery and Birmingham that broke heavily for him. These are Republican suburbs. Many of us was college-educated Republican women, particularly, were just been turned off by Mr. Trump, and so they were the ones that broke heavily. So, we'll see how that plays out over these next weeks and months ahead. So
I know people have been talking about the blue wave. So mm-hmm. that's really taking place. This
the legislative races, and you know, you've seen now several states where you've had teacher strikes: West Virginia, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. Kentucky, Arizona, I think Colorado, and I think it's probably some of those cases there's going to be some changes in their leadership.
Well, we should have balance of power. Shouldn't be just one side.
Here's the thing. You know, we've had for this last 8 years in Ohio, one-party rule. You now have this scandal involving the former House Speaker, Mr. Rosenberger.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Democrats are going to look at that. The ECOT thing with the that whole deal and spending on that. You know, it's just a kind of a feeling that there's things are off track here.
Okay.
And this is it's interesting. About 300 years ago, there was an English political scientist by the name of John, I can't think of his last name now, but he made or Lord Acton, I don't know his name, Lord Acton. And he made a comment at that time, and it probably is relevant today as it was in his time,
mm-hmm.
that power tends to corrupt. And absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely.
I agree with that.
This is what happens when you have one party in control. For a prolonged time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw this. You know, the last big Democratic year was 12 years ago in 2006.
Right.
It was called the CoinGate scandal.
Mm-hmm.
Going back a whole lot of years before that, almost 50 years ago, you have what was called the Crofters Loan scandal in 1970, and that brought John Gilligan into the governor's office. And again, it's just, you know, it's a bad deal to have one party in power for too long because it tends to breed, I don't know, complacency, corruption, whatever you want to call it.
Right, so. Because, you know, what they're saying is voter turnout is so low as it is. You know, people are, I don't know if they're losing faith or they have come complacent.
Well, actually, I'll tell you what's happening this year so far. What we've seen over the last, maybe the last year, Democratic turnout has been well. It's been the Republican turnout that's been down.
Oh, okay.
That's why Democrats have won them all these special elections in these, a lot of these state legislative seats. Okay. Congressional seats and so forth, is that Democrats are turning up the polls and Republicans haven't been. I'll give you an example. Last fall in the state of Virginia, which they had their state elections, there was thinking that the Democrat was going to win the governor's office. Some actually got close to election day, the Republican might win. But on election day, election night, the Democrats just blew it away because what happened was apparently it was raining in Northern Virginia outside D.C. that day. People were standing in line.
Right.
And Republican voter turnout was up, but the Democratic voter turnout was way up. Good. And the result was a Democratic tidal wave.
Good.
And you know, as I say, people get bad, and one of the things that pollsters look at is the intensity. Mm-hmm. You can have approval, disapproval, but what about the intensity? Mm-hmm. Well, Democrats are, in terms of intensity, of particularly dislike of Mr. Trump, it's like 2-1.
Oh, yeah.
And intensity and dislike or whatever you want to say is a major motivating factor as to how that happened.
And I'm sure, you know, maybe some even jumped tickets to vote for him.
Well, actually, Daryl Rollins, who is the public affairs editor of the Columbus Dispatch, the last two Sundays, they've had the early voting in Franklin County, which is, you know, it's become a Democratic county, but he says the Democratic intensity has just been incredible.
Good.
That, that number of people who have requested the Democratic ballot as opposed to the Republican ballot has been, you know, huge. People who have actually switched from R to D has been large, and there's been some D to R, but the R to D switch has been huge.
Right.
And then also the number of people who were unaffiliated, may have been independents, taking the Democratic ballot, the Republican ballot has been like 3 or 4 to 1.
Right.
And that is in Franklin County now. I mean, that's short around the state. And so far, and again, I'll obviously know tomorrow, but so far the last couple weeks, the Secretary of State has put out the numbers for early voting. Democrats have been taking far more ballots than Republicans have.
Okay.
So.
And I guess, you know, they're doing all they can to save President Trump's neck, right?
Well,
pull him out the fire.
You know, it's... there are some concerns there, and we'll see.
And it should be. Well, I think everyone knew that he was a playboy, rich boy, playboy, years ago. I mean, that was nothing new.
You know, I think we should be very blunt here. Mr. Trump did not expect to win the presidency. I think he was one of the most surprised people.
He acted like
it. And again, if someone would have told me that Hillary Clinton could get 3 million more votes approximately than Donald Trump and still not win, I would have thought that would have been not possible. But it was a freak of the Electoral College.
Right.
That in the three states of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, that just enough votes in those three states, and it was about a 78,000 vote edge, if you had shifted less than 40,000 votes in the three states, she would have been elected because she would have the Electoral College majority also.
Right.
So it was a, you know, and this is a concern. Now, there was interesting, a number of states have entered what they call an Electoral College Compact, that these states pledge that their electors will vote for the winner of the popular vote regardless.
Okay.
Now, so far, I'm not sure how many number of states have done it, but states with a total of about 170 electoral votes out of the 270 you need have now agreed to this, but you're going to need some more states. Now, if you get to a point where enough states have at least 270 electoral votes agree to this, you would not necessarily need to amend the Constitution, because if states are going to go ahead and have their electors vote for the popular vote winner, you wouldn't have the divide between the popular vote winner and the electoral vote winner. You would have it always, it would be always the same. Mm-hmm. As I said, up until 2000, the last time we had a division between the popular vote and the electoral vote was in 1888. And all those years I was teaching, I never thought I'd ever see it again. Then it happened in 2000 when you had George W. Bush narrowly Well, actually, about by half a million more votes than Al Gore.
Right.
And ended
right.
up winning it 271 to 1269 or something like that. And then just 16 years later, we had a second time to have it happen. And this time, though, the margin was 3 million, which, again, I just, that was the, that has been the
that
widest margin.
Unexplainable, yeah.
Widest really margin was. Popular vote to have it go opposite but the Electoral College.
Right.
And it was just, as I say, unusual, say the least.
Like you said, a freak, right?
Yeah, so.
Whoa, okay. So you did talk about the national level where it concerns us mm-hmm. on the local level. Mm-hmm. And we have talked about the blue wave,
mm-hmm.
which is very important, the blue wave, because I don't think a lot of people who did jump party lines to vote for the president expected all that we're getting back in return, the payoff.
Yeah, I think there's been, what happened was, and actually I got the almanac this last, few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary Clinton overall got 48% of the popular vote nationwide. Donald Trump had 46%. That comes up to about 94%.
Mm-hmm.
The other 6% was cast for third-party candidates.
All right.
And that's about 4% more than usual. Usually mm-hmm. the third-party vote is about 2% overall.
Okay.
But you had the Libertarian candidate, Gary Johnson, and former Republican governor of Mexico,
right.
when as a Libertarian candidate, got like 3% vote. That was like 4 million-plus votes.
Mm-hmm.
Which for a third-party candidate is pretty good.
Right.
And then you had, I believe it was about 1% or 2% for Dr. Jill Stein, who was the Green Party candidate.
Right.
And then you had about 1% for a variety of other third-party or whatever candidates. But that 6%, which was about, altogether, about 6, 7 million votes, that was the, and in these three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. if you add up all the votes that Mr. Trump got, and all the votes that were not for Mr. Trump, the you might say the non- or anti-Trump vote was a majority.
Right.
But the only thing was, it was split between, or among, Hillary Clinton, Mr. Johnson, Mrs. Green, and, or, you know, Stein, or other candidates. So,
right.
And so he was able to win narrow plurality wins in those three states. And that's what allowed him to end up being the president, because of the Electoral College does actually elect the president.
A lot of people were very unhappy with that process.
Well, that was, so.
You know, and they a lot of people still haven't gotten over it.
Well,
you know,
yeah, I know it was shocking to say the least.
Yeah.
I think it was probably the biggest upset for Brad President since Harry Truman beat Tom Dewey in 1948. So
okay, and then that's been some years back.
Yeah. And there, I mean, Harry got not only the electoral vote, he also had the popular vote lead, too.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, all right, that's how it went, so.
Okay. I know he's on the Democratic ticket. He came here to speak once, and I can't think of his name. Do you think he would run for president in 2020? I think you know who I'm talking about. I don't know if he's Hispanic or what, but what's his name? He came mm-hmm. here to speak when Hillary was running.
Oh, boy. Off the top of my head, I cannot think who that might have been. I don't know.
I think he's the head of the Democratic Party.
I cannot think who that might have been. So, yeah.
I have to think of his. I'm gonna have to write down his name.
Yeah.
So I'll know next time.
One other thing I like to mention here. This is kind of off the topic a little bit.
Okay.
I think many people in the country have the prayers for John McCain, who is suffering. He's, of course, last summer he was diagnosed with brain cancer.
I remember that, yeah.
And the same kind of cancer that claimed the life of Ted Kennedy, claimed the life of Beau Biden, Joe Biden's son here a couple years ago.
Okay.
And it doesn't look good at this point. In fact, back in July of last year when they diagnosed him, just knowing what happened after Ted Kennedy, Bo Biden, other people who mm-hmm. had, I mean, this is a very, it's almost a very terminal type of illness that maybe 14 to 15 months, and he and his family are coming to grips with his mortality at this point.
Oh, wow.
And I know a lot of people are hoping to maybe he can get through it, but it doesn't look good at this point. He hasn't been in this. He hasn't been in Washington since December.
Really, and, I haven't watched much politics.
And apparently, he's also has made it clear does not want Mr. Trump at his funeral. And and apparently, he's asked former presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama to give the eulogies.
Oh, really?
So, who knows where how this is going to go? But it doesn't sound too good that. In the weeks or months ahead, it's not going to, you know.
So. I'm so sorry to hear that.
Well, I know a lot of people. I mean, whether we agree or disagree with John McCain's political views and so forth, the man was a war hero who
served
the country.
Yes.
And
honest man.
Yeah, and
I
so
can say that,
as I say it, I know a lot of people are thinking of him at this point. So.
I'm glad you brought that up. I hadn't heard anything about it. Really.
Yeah, it's been. Somewhat in the news the last few weeks. So,
other than when he first brought it up, mm-hmm. and we lost Barbara Bush.
Yes, yeah, of course.
And then Senior Bush, President Bush, he ended up
hospitalized for a week or 10 days, and he's now back home.
Okay, he's been
released. George H.W. Bush, yeah, he's back home. So
that's good. That's good. That's good. Good news. Good news.
So again, I would just remind people: 6:30 tomorrow is the polls open until 7:30 tomorrow night. And hopefully there will be it's going to be a very good, excellent weather tomorrow, as far as that goes, sunshine, whatever, so.
We deserve it.
Yeah. So.
After all these days of cold and rain and snow even, right?
So, yeah.
Last month, April.
So, yep.
And I mean, it snowed off and on to the middle of April.
Yeah, and that's a little later than usual for around here even, so.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Get out the vote, people, those of you who are listening. I hope you enjoyed our historian, Tim Combs. He has brought us up to date with everything that's going on politically. So hopefully you will get out the vote. And it's sad that a lot of us won't even take the time who are registered to vote to go out and vote. But then again, that may be changing. You know, people have a lot to say and want to be a part of the system, and especially the young people, 18, who's turning 18 this year before November. Please remember to get registered. So that you can be a part of the
That's
process.
One thing the high schools do at the high school government classes is they register the 18-year-olds. Yeah,
that's great. Even though you're registered, don't mean stay home. Still get out and vote, okay? Well, Tim, thank you. We are out of time.
Okay.
I appreciate you always being on the show.
Okay. Come back later some other time.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Okay. We got another election coming.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP, Marion, Ohio. The place to talk. Bob McGrath from Sesame Street.
Who are the people in your neighborhood? In your neighborhood. In your neighborhood. Say, who are the people in your neighborhood? The people that you meet when you're walking down the street. The people that you meet.
Legendary newsman Hugh Downs, did you ever think you would be referring to the NBC News anchor as doing something this stupid?
No, I never did think I would. I didn't think that could happen because, first of all, I think the way NBC itself has handled this is really not as smart as it could be. There could be a... they got to quit using words like mistake and error and start saying what the truth is. That's what they're trying to get out. If they do that, they could get some public restoration of their credibility and help themselves a lot. But they're not doing that. They're still willing to call it a mistake, and that's dumb. It is dumb.
Legendary actor from Barney Miller, Abe Vigoda.
I'm gonna be 94 years old. I'm gonna be 94 years old. I'm so grateful to God.
And from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Mr. McFeely.
If there's anything you want, if there's anything you need, McFeely's Delivery brings it to you here with speed. Yes, our speedy delivery is a speedy delivery. Speedy delivery to you, Scott.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.
Does it seem everyone is mumbling? Are you constantly asking people to repeat themselves? Is it a struggle to hear on the phone? Do you experience ringing in your ears? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you may have hearing loss. Hearing loss develops gradually, and treating it as soon as you recognize the warning signs can prevent it from getting worse. A free in-office hearing screening from Beltone can help determine your hearing loss and how best to treat it. 740-389-5566 to schedule your free hearing evaluation.
The WWGH Radio prize policy is as follows. You have 10 days from the day you win the prize to pick the prize up. You can only win once every 30 days. WWGH Radio staff reserves the right to question any and all prize winnings. The WWGH offices are open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. for